Hello, everyone. Dan Delman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. First of all, we're going to look at a provocative book that was published during this past winter. It's entitled, How to Hide an Empire, A History of the Greater United States. The author is Daniel Immerwahr. His new book only sounds like it might be a yawn, but believe me, it isn't. It's wry, it's readable, and it's often astonishing. This young history professor's chronicle of the United States emphasizes territorial expansion in a way that entirely recasts our nation's story. Though our politicians have always described an America that disdains imperialism, the nation we encounter in Immerwahr's book has been ruthlessly acquisitive from its inception. First, the U.S. spread west, expelling the native populations. But it also began picking up island territories by the 1850s and continued to expand its total land mass for the next century. Today, the nation maintains 800 overseas military bases through Russia's 9 and remains an imperial power in all but its self-image. Seen through Immerwahr's lens, even the most familiar historical events seem to take on a startlingly different cast. You learn something amazing on almost every page. Seabird droppings, valuable as fertilizer, spurred the U.S. to claim dozens of barren islands in a crucial early overseas expansion. And Immerwahr finds ways to fit Godzilla, the Beatles, and the peace sign into this surprising history. He opens on a darker note with the December 8th, 1941 Japanese air attack on the Philippines, a U.S. territory that suffered far greater losses than Pearl Harbor, but was talked about less from the start because the truth about our nation's interests in the Pacific didn't help the case for war. Racism often played a part in such decisions. Though Hawaii eventually became a state, Puerto Rico, the pre-1946 Philippines, and pre-1902 Cuba, with their large non-white populations, were never granted that option. Our leaders preferred to obscure U.S. imperialism and to take advantage of lands where the residents lacked full citizenship rights. Immerwahr is probably right to point out certain American self-deceptions. However, U.S. hegemony has probably been a good thing, especially compared with the world's possible fates had a different superpower emerged. Still, for Immerwahr, shame or guilt is somewhat beside the point. He wishes simply to wean Americans away from the comforting myths and awaken them to their nation's true role in the world. It's a question of accuracy to him. of knowing what it is that you see when you look into the mirror. All countries have myths, and a body of myth which unites. The United States is no different. Thanks to The Week magazine for its book review on How to Hide an Empire. And now we're going to look at an extended article about one of our great authors, Edgar Allan Poe. In the January-February 2019 issue of Smithsonian Magazine, you'll find the following. Elizabeth Becker went all the way from Wisconsin to Philadelphia last July to introduce two young children to America's sacred text, but not the Declaration of Independence. It was Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven. She walked their kids into one of the most important shrines of the Poe cult, a dark and dreary hallway in the central library, and sat them in front of a glass case holding Grip, the name of the raven believed to have inspired Poe's great poem, which was published in 1845. Becker, sitting on the floor with her charges, read aloud from a pop-up book of The Raven. And then she posted the photos on Facebook, where more than a million fans of some 100 Poe-themed Facebook pages are lurking. It was just another suitably weird tribute to the most influential American author. Mystery author, I should say. A literary brand beyond the considerable dreams of Twain, Melville, Wharton, Whitman, Hemingway, and Fitzgerald. Like the great Gatsby and Moby Dick, Poe's The Fall of the House of Usher and The Cask of Amontillado are among the top 100 books assigned in American college English classes. But Poe is not confined to scholarly debate. Each January 19th, hundreds of Poe fans mark his birthday in 1809 with pilgrimages to Poe sites in Philadelphia, in Baltimore, New York, and in Richmond, Virginia. The stories and poems scribbled by the half-mad romantic, have shaped our national obsession with tales of chaos and darkness. No other American writer has had as enduring and pervasive an influence on popular culture. Go to YouTube, and you'll find The Raven, about the ill-omened creature given to chanting "Nevermore." It's read aloud by Christopher Walken, William Shatner, James Earl Jones, and Lisa Simpson, Homer's daughter. Poe's tale has inspired actors such as Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff, John Cusack, and Huey, Louie, and Dewey. The mathematician Mike Keith reworked the poem so that the number of letters in each word corresponds to the first 740 digits of pi. And only Poe among the literary giants has an NFL football team named for one of his works, the Baltimore Ravens. The team won the Super Bowl in January 2001 with a great defense. Quote the Ravens, never score. Poe changed the world literature with the first detective story. The Murders in the Rue Morgue, published in 1841. In other words, he made possible about 80% of contemporary literature and television programming. According to J.W. Oker, who is author of Poland. With C. Auguste Dupin, a brilliant eccentric outsider who outsmarts the bumbling constabulary with analytical reasoning, Poe created the forerunner of all fictional detectives to come. In 1901, Arthur Conan Doyle, who created Sherlock Holmes, called Poe the father of the detective tale and complained that Poe had covered its limits so completely that, quote, I fail to see how his followers can find any fresh ground which can confidently be called their own, unquote. Poe's fictional tales of ratiocination, as Poe himself called them, also introduced a style of deduction that influenced real-world crime-solving. Back again with Edgar Allan Poe. Horror writers from Stephen King to H.P. Lovecraft to Justin Cronin claim blood relations with Poe. Earlier European Gothic fiction emphasized the supernatural, castles and curses. But Poe brought horror down to earth and made us fear the ordinary and the everyday. The deranged narrator in The Telltale Heart decides to murder his housemate because he has an evil eye. Or maybe because he just wants to. It was the first story of sociopathic horror, says Stephen King, the predecessor of modern nightmares like Thomas Harris's Hannibal Lecter. It may well be that Walt Whitman's poetry and, as Ernest Hemingway would say, Mark Twain's novel Huckleberry Finn created the American vernacular. But Poe gave us the stories that we tell and retell. Poe was tuned in to the modern age and its rejection of religious taboos against exploring the realms of horror and death. There sits the imp of the perverse with the most entertaining ghastly tales ever told. But he is also the perfect fit for our postmodern age when each person makes of the demon of mystery and fright what he or she will. Annabel Lee, Poe's Ode to a Woman Loved So Intensely the Angels Grew Envious and Killed Her, is suggested as a reading now at weddings. While on YouTube, Goth Girl, her eyelids the green of grave rot, reads the same tale aloud in the cemetery. Poe has long had a reputation as a drunken genius, and bohemians, tormented artists, and struggling writers, and even drug addicts, embrace him as their own. More recently, though, the 2017 PBS American Masters film Edgar Allan Poe, Buried Alive, downplayed the tortured image. He comes off instead as a smart guy who wanted to become famous, changed jobs all the time, and was fascinated with technology. Maybe Edgar Allan Poe was the first millennial. Poe's death in 1849 was something the author himself might have written. Missing for nearly a week, he was found incoherent on the streets of Baltimore, wearing clothes that did not belong to him. He died 4 days later at age 40. But as Poe famously wrote in The Premature Burial, the boundaries which divide life and death are at best shadowy and vague, and his voice is still heard from beyond the grave. Never rest in peace, Edgar Allan Poe. You people with pets, listen to this. Fat dogs die early. If you can't persuade your family to stop feeding your dog scraps from the dinner table, try this line of argument. They could be cutting short poor Fido's life. Researchers looked at the lifespans of 50,000 dogs that were taken to veterinarians in the U.S., between 1994 and 2015. The hounds were from 12 of the most popular family breeds, and included dachshunds, golden retrievers, and Labrador retrievers. Researchers found that being overweight was linked to a reduced lifespan in every one of the breeds, from 5 months shorter in German Shepherds to 2.5 years shorter in Yorkshire Terriers. The study did not explore why chubby dogs died earlier than svelte ones, but previous research has shown that overweight pooches are more likely to suffer from joint disease, breathing issues, and cancer, all of which reduce longevity. Being careful about what you feed your dog could go a long way toward keeping them in good shape and enabling them to be around for many years to come. And now we go to Iowa, to an Iowa truck stop. The world's largest truck stop shouldn't be passed lightly because it is beyond what you would expect. Located halfway between New York City and San Francisco on Interstate 80, the Iowa 80 truck stop isn't just a place where long-distance truckers can park and shower and enjoy a hot meal. No, it's a 225-acre traveler sanctuary that averages 5,000 customers a day. The operation, which hasn't closed since it opened as a two-pump station in 1964, now includes a massive convenience store, a barbershop, a gym, a library, a 65-seat movie theater, a small chapel, a dentist's office, a chiropractor, and also a museum with 100 vintage trucks on display. There are, in addition, several eateries, including a 300-seat diner, which is known for a warm apple dumpling dessert, which is served with cinnamon and ice cream. And none of it's for truckers only. So belly up to the driver counter for conversation and stories when you're on the road. This important item from The Week magazine, January 25th, 2019. Cancer deaths are on the decline in the United States. The U.S. cancer death rate plummeted by 27% from 1991 to 2016. A decline that amounts to as many as 2.6 million lives saved. That's the encouraging conclusion of a new report by the American Cancer Society, which examined data from sources including the National Center for Health Statistics and the National Program of Cancer Registries. Researchers noted that the cancer death rate climbed steadily for most of the 20th century, largely because of men dying from lung cancer. But after peaking in 1991, the rate has dropped 1.1% a year. The drop-off is due mainly to anti-smoking campaigns and advances in the detection and treatment of cancer. It's not all good news, though. The report estimates 1.8 million new cancer cases this year and more than 600,000 deaths. Prostate cancer deaths are no longer falling, and obesity-related cancer deaths are rising, a trend that researchers worry could signal larger problems ahead. We are probably only seeing the tip of the iceberg regarding the influence of the obesity epidemic on cancer, according to an article in the Wall Street Journal. Another cause for concern is that among adults under age 55, the incidence of colorectal cancer has increased almost 2% a year since the mid-1990s. Some scientists think obesity is to blame. Others suspect something else is going on. But everyone is scrambling to figure out why. And now, as we end near the end of today's show, let me tell you what to look forward to in shows in the very near future. We're going to examine the demise of journalism. In addition to that, we're going to look at working without offices and working in a cubicle. We'll take a look at that and see what people think about it. There's a growing crisis in Venezuela that we should look into. Thanks for listening. Please tune in next time. We'd like to have you around. Take care.